learning and development is at the pleasure of the business. It is, we are here not just to create amazingly cool things, but we're here to propel our businesses forward. And if we don't understand where the business is going, we can't do that.
You're listening to Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. On each episode, we sit down with key industry experts to discover more about what's happening in the world of learning and development, from current trends and insights to the most valuable lessons learned along the way. Join us for a fresh perspective on all things training and the best direction forward. Here's your host, Leanne Lankford.
Hi, welcome to Learning Leader Spotlight, the podcast where we interview learning leaders of today to help the learning leaders of tomorrow. I'm your host, Leanne Lankford. I'm the president of Training Pros, an L&D contract staffing company. At Training Pros, we like to say, when you have more projects than people, let us find you the consultant to start your project with confidence. I am really excited today. My guest is Teresa Zeller. She's the global head of learning creation at Merck. Welcome, Teresa.
Hi, Leanne. Hi, everyone. Gosh, great to be here. Thanks so much for your invitation.
Oh, I'm just thrilled you accepted it. This is wonderful. Teresa and I have talked before this podcast, and she has a lot of great things to tell us. So I'm really excited. Teresa, why don't you start off by telling our listeners at home a 60-second overview of who you are and what you do?
Fantastic. So I am, as Leanne said, I work globally. I'm the global learning creation lead at Merck. And what that means is I have the opportunity to lead all creation of learning experiences, whether that's build, buy, modify, for over 75,000 employees across our organization and leaders around the globe. And that's in our commercial business, our manufacturing business, our research labs, as well as our global chair functions. And the way that we think about that and the way that we think about the learning is across five development areas: leadership, functional technical, career acceleration, company culture, and mandatory. That's a little bit about what I do, a little bit about who I am. I'm a professional who's been in the learning business for, 29 years at Merck and a couple companies before I got in. I joined Merck, and I've had the pleasure of being in the commercial business, leading learning for manufacturing, as well as this role. I've had a myriad of roles, both strategic and across the organization. So I've gotten to see learning from a lot of interesting vantage points in three different organizations. It's helped me create the perspective that I have today.
You have got a very large scope of responsibility from what you've just said. Can you talk to our audience about how you first got attracted to learning and development?
Yeah, so I'm probably one of those rare people that found it very, very early in my career. It was my senior year of college. I was an industrial organizational psychology major with a comm minor. And I had this amazing program my last semester, my senior year, which was called Training in Business. And it really helped me to see and lit a fire and a passion in me that I frankly didn't know was there, as I was trying to think, what am I going to do with myself after I graduate? And that passion was around the power that learning has to really change behavior and change behavior to help individuals achieve their goals, but also to help organizations achieve their business goals. And I was a research assistant to that professor and for another semester, and he encouraged me to get my graduate degree. So I went on, got my master's in organization development and learning and development. And it was a new sort of combination of programs at the time. And I have been somebody who stayed very true to the functional expertise in this area of learning and development, just because for me, it was, you know, that moment was like the clouds parted and I saw a future. And it's continued to excite me. The industry has continued to change and grow and get more exciting with more tools, more capability. They just love the opportunity to be able to help folks to do something that they couldn't do before and to make a real difference in both their lives and in the outcomes of the business.
That is a great story. And you've queued up my next question perfectly, which is, what are the biggest changes you've seen in the last 5 years in L&D?
So I love that L&D continues to evolve. And I know it evolves at different paces in different organizations and in different parts around the globe. What I've seen as general shifts and changes is that L&D is playing a more and more impactful role, increasingly important role in the human capital management arena alongside our HR and our talent colleagues. We're partnering with the business differently to understand truly the strategic business goals and offer solutions that can either accelerate growth, that can help the organization pivot to take advantage of opportunities that maybe weren't there a little bit ago, or trends, and to really make significant cultural shifts and changes. And by that, gosh, I've been through mergers and acquisitions. It's been shifts in models in the organization, shifts in strategic frameworks, or it might be something as big as a digital transformation that helps us to think fundamentally differently about the way that we work. So that's been a huge one that I've seen learning being invited in earlier and in a more impactful way. I just mentioned digital transformation. You can't deny that technology has changed the way we've thought about learning. Obviously, COVID changed the way we think about learning and helped to expedite that digital transformation along its way. I think probably without that experience, that shared experience that we all have had, I don't know that we would have maybe leapt into the digital age quite as quickly as we did and quite as meaningfully. And then I think the third thing I would say is I think we've seen some really seismic shifts in the way that we engage clients now because of that technology, because of the tools we have, the systems we have, the methods and the choices that we have now that we just didn't have before. I think the tools help us to drive efficiency in learning. I think they help us to engage our clients, our employees differently. And I think they help us to do something that I think was always an aspiration of learning and development. That's to keep pace with the rapid change in skills that we're seeing now really shift dramatically and dynamically, because now we can keep pace with that kind of change. So those are some of the things that I've seen in the last 5 years. Some of the things we've gotten to take significant advantage of, some things I think we are still on the infancy toddlership of taking advantage of as an industry.
That's a lot of changes, but I agree that the last 5 years have been monumental in terms of changes in every profession in the US, I think. What about the next 5 years? What are the big changes you think are coming for L&D in the next 5 years?
So I see some of the things we just talked about even more begin to more rapidly unfold. And so I think a big change that has to happen, if it hasn't happened already in each organization and across the industry, is we have to be more and more business aligned. I think first and foremost, learning leaders and learning professionals really need to understand the business that they're in. They need to understand the business goals, the business challenges, and they need to be able to focus in on the critical aspects, the critical capabilities impacting the business's ability to achieve its goals. We need to be more proactive in being able to identify skills and capabilities the business is going to need. And I think the business is looking to us to do that. So if these are the things I need to succeed in the future, how can you come alongside me and make sure that our folks are ready when we're ready? And we know that there's a little bit of a ramp up time that's important. I think that's important for talent retention. I think it's important for the high cost of bringing new talent in and turnover. I think it's important to be able to have some continual through line of culture, to be able to ensure that you're really nurturing and pulling from within. That doesn't mean it's not important to bring talent and attract talent, but I think we've got to prepare the employees that we have more rapidly. And that means at every level, every skill level. So I think really being able to ensure that our employees are, that folks are learning all the time at all levels, becomes really important. So that's the first big one. I think I see the business alignment as being so critical. Second one I'll say is, Leanne, is I think technically agile is going to be critical in the next 5 years. And as quick as and as rapid as we've seen changes in technology, I think this was just the warm-up phase. We're still finding our feet with technology in a lot of cases, and we're going to start to see, I think, convergence. I think we're going to need to start to experiment how systems start to work together in a much more integrated way. Right now, there's a lot of players. There's a lot of things that don't necessarily give us a view that's an end-to-end view of human capital management. And I think we're going to start to see things pan out. We're going to have to be really agile because it might mean we're going to have to not use our favorite blank tool, but adapt to another tool and do that really quickly. It's also going to mean we're going to need to be able to quickly take advantage of new methodologies and how that might change the way that we deliver learning in the future. The thing that I think I'm most excited and I see as a trend is but I think as an industry, we've been touting and talking about personalized learning a long time. I'm not sure we've really gotten to the promise of real personalized learning, but I think we're on the brink of it more holistically. And by that, we're targeted personalized learning experience that as people are trying to skill and rapidly upskill, which is going to be huge in the next 5 years, we've got to be ready with things as quickly as they are needing things. And it's got to be accessible. It's got to be seamless for them to be able to leverage. It's got to be in the context of their work, not just quick pieces that are nice in general, but don't really help me to be able to do my job. Because I think the real key is going to be, how do we move from knowledge acquisition, seeing, being exposed to best practices, to now that shift of building the skill and being able to apply to the work that I'm doing today. So I think we've got to figure out how technology plays across with skills and how do I leverage it to our best advantage to really drive, which will be the next one, measurable impact, right? Because when I think about that one, I'll kind of lay them out and then you can say which ones you want to poke into a little bit more. But when I think about the skills platforms that we're going to start to see and really being able to use skill as a currency, Leanne, I get excited about the fact that right now we have folks that enter skills that they believe they have. And I think in the future, it's going to be really important to have verifiable skills, know what is really demonstrated and how do we know it's demonstrated? And so how do we learn and get to a place where we can really, with a good degree of certainty, be able to help people grow those skills and help people verify them? So those are like the big trends that I see coming that at least I'm trying to get my team and my organization ready for.
That is a lot to get your team ready for. A lot of those concepts excite me quite a bit because I haven't worked in corporate L&D since for over 20 years. Back when I was in that kind of role, you could not personalize learning. You couldn't, putting it in the flow of work really meant maybe having a help file contextualized to the page. That was the best we could do with that, or a robotic simulation or something like that. It was just everything was so much more difficult to do. We didn't have all of these beautiful tools you're talking about. But I really loved one of the things you said about verifiable skills. And skills as the new currency. The skills-based hiring, the skills-based training, skills-based economy is something I keep hearing about and it fascinates me. So I'm glad you touched on that. So are any of those you want to talk about a little more?
We're seeing new rules pop up. We at our organization have a skills strategy lead. And I am super excited to be working with that individual. And what I think we're on the brink of, and it's not that I don't think other organizations have done this, but I don't think at scale. I think what's going to become important is A, a common language, B, being able to look at skills in a way that we can map our needs, our skill needs. So I need to, as a business, I need to be able to do X and Y. What are the skills that are going to be critical to do that? Then take those skills and say, okay, First of all, where are they resident in the organization? Do I have those skills or are they gaps? And all of this should be able to be automated, right? Where do I have those experts in the organization? And then how big's my gap? And being able to laser focus in on the kinds of skill development we need to do to be able to close that gap and then tailor our learning to drive right after those skills. Really thinking about how we map learning to skills. And then to your point, it's not just about helping people to be exposed to a skill area, but how do we help them be exposed to it at a foundational level? How do we help them to grow in proficiency at more intermediate levels and more advanced levels? And how do we help them to demonstrate along the way what that means in their own job? So you talked about in the flow of work, and I've been a big proponent for in the flow of work. And I think where we're getting ready to jump into is not in the flow of work, but in work. So how do we start to embed the learning in the work that I'm doing such that I'm seeing the impact and the outcomes, I'm getting that practical expertise and experience, and I'm advancing the work as a result of it. That gives us business impact. It gives us business benefits. It now elevates, if you will, learning to a full business partner because I can't get those results unless I have you with me. And I think that's so exciting. And I do think skills is the equalizer because we can see them. We can see them manifest in behaviors. We can document them. We can verify them. And I think that's going to push our measurement schema and strategies and discipline as a whole.
This episode is brought to you by Training Pros, the award-winning contract staffing agency that works exclusively with learning and development professionals to match the right consultants to client projects. If you're in corporate L&D and have more projects than people, let the industry practitioners at Training Pros provide you with the right L&D consultant to start your project with confidence. Find out how we make finding quality consultants easy by scheduling a consultation at www.trainingpros.com.
You've given our audience a lot to think about and to go research and learn more about. I want to shift gears a little bit. And could you talk about maybe who was your most influential professional mentor?
It's a hard question because I've been truly blessed to have a number of amazing people who have really shaped my career, from leaders to coaches to mentors. I can't say come to mind. And if I think about it in the order of like when they entered my career, the first was a gentleman by the name of Steve Krupp, and he was a strategic partner. And I would say from him, I learned very early in my career how important business acumen was, how important it was to be business aligned, how important it was to know my client's business almost better than they know their business and where the challenges were. And he taught me strategic thinking and how to think about vision, how to think about execution of that vision, how to think of and help my clients understand that better. So that was a whole stretch area for me that to this day, I continue to be in touch with this mentor, with Steve. Second one I would say was Daryl Griffin. And he was my mentor in all things healthcare related. So when I moved into pharma, I had a whole lot of learning to do. I thought I was in healthcare, rehabilitation services and PT, OT, et cetera. But moving into pharma was a whole different world and really understanding things from a client perspective, a customer perspective, a patient's perspective, a practitioner's perspective was invaluable to me. And the way that he helped me to understand that and the way that we train up our colleagues to be able to be really effective in interfacing with our customers was invaluable. And we worked together for years. And then the last one, and all of them I've kept in touch with. And the last one is William Spencer. And what I learned from William, he was my neuroscience guy, my always up to speed on the latest thinking of the amazing thing we call our brain, and helping me to really stretch in areas of how does our brain work? How can we engage folks truly head, heart, hands so that learning makes a difference? So it sticks, it becomes behavior, it becomes that muscle memory, and it becomes something that now is verifiable because it really drives into sustainable behavior change. So those are probably my three mentors, and I owe so much to all three of them.
So I'm glad you have so many. One of the things I always ask this question, because I want to encourage our listeners, if they don't have a professional mentor helping their career along, all of you who come on the show had professional mentors. That's the best way to find your way forward.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you. You know, we can read so many books, we can participate in seminars, et cetera, but there's something different when you have that ability to have one-on-one conversations and be able to be challenged. I mean, each one of them would have no problems calling me out. Teresa, you need to think about this. Stop. Did you hear what you just said? You need somebody who's going to really hold that mirror up and challenge you to do something different, better, maybe a little scary.
I agree. Is there a skill when you're hiring people now that is difficult for you to find, or one that you really look hard for?
So I have amazing architects, designers, developers. I think the skill that I would say is one of the most critical skills, because I call it an upstream skill, is the skill of performance consulting. And so I say that because it doesn't matter how amazing, and they are really amazing, architects, designers, developers, content specialists I have on my team, no matter how amazing they are, and no matter what an amazing learning they have created, if we didn't get it right up front, we didn't really hear the client, didn't really understand the business goal and outcome that we were driving for, if we didn't get that, we're going to miss every time. We'll have something beautiful. It'll be a beautiful miss, but it's still going to be a miss. And we're going to have lots of learning sitting on the shelf that doesn't drive impact and doesn't get leveraged. I would say performance consulting remains for me one of the most critical skills, that ability to really be able to sit down at any level with a leader, with a subject matter expert, with a stakeholder, to really be able to hear what's going on in the business, understand what that actually means, and diagnose well the skill gap and the capability that is missing, or that's not as developed as it needs to be, that is a gap. And to be able to contract well with the client, to be able to make sure that we've got the right connection throughout, so that we're truly building learning that matters. I would say that's the most important one.
I love that, because you're taking me back to the roots of my learning. Do you remember that book called Performance Consulting?
Yeah.
It's back on your shelf. Yeah, it was like the must have in my department back at GE. And then you mentioned the contracting with your internal clients. We were doing that in the late 90s. We were doing what we called a results contract with our clients, as we worked out what needed to happen and what result needed to be at the end of the training. And I remember I was in grad school at night, and I had to miss classes all the time because I had to travel. And so I would always get to make up the grade by doing a presentation. And I did one on results contracting in action. This is what we're really doing in the world.
That's great. To me, it's never going to change, because learning and development is at the pleasure of the business. It is, we are here not just to create amazingly cool things, but we're here to propel our businesses forward. And if we don't understand where the business is going, we can't do that.
Absolutely. And you mentioned business acumen before, and that seems to be a common thread with all of the learning leaders I've been interviewing. They're all state how important understanding the business you work with. You have to understand it as well as any other leader in the company. Let's shift gears now. And why don't you share with our audience where you get your industry news and information?
So a lot of it's from peers, right? So sharing, peer sharing and benchmarking. I would say my go-to of the research teams is Brandon Hall. So we have a membership, and they really appreciate my ability to be able to not only benefit from the studies they have, participate in the studies, but when I have a particular challenge, and there's always one or two or three, you know, as you're pushing forward and doing something you hadn't done before. I appreciate being able to call up my contacts and be able to just say, here's the thing that I'm trying to figure out. Who's done it? Who's done it really well? What's the research telling me? And there have been times where if it's in an area that's, I've been able to sit down with some of their top of the house advisors and sit down and just be able to noodle around with how do I approach this? And so I would say that's one of my first go-tos. And you're probably the same. You got all the folks coming in your inbox. So I'm always looking at which newsletter and which, you know, so it's not that I didn't benefit from a whole host of really great sources, but I would say that's usually if I'm going to reach out and go, that's my go-to.
I think that's very helpful. And we do the Brandon Hall event every year in February or January. Last question, my favorite one. What is one book that you would recommend to someone wanting to become a learning leader?
So when I have an intern, and I've had quite a few now, there's always one of two books I give them. So I'm supposed to pick one, so I will get myself to one. I will, without doubt, give them Taking Learning to Task by Jane Vella. And what I like about that is it really breaks down the things that you really need to think about to ensure that your learning is driving those meaningful outcomes. So it's a nice sort of, it's a great refresher for all of us at any time, because there are things that you forget that are, you know, sometimes or you drift away from. But I think particularly I leverage that for anybody that I know that's starting out in the business and in the industry. And I think it remains pretty timeless.
So I'm adding it to my reading list. You've done one of the rare things and stumped me on a book that I haven't read yet. So
I hope you like it. Tell me.
It's going to go on my Audible so I can sit to it while I'm doing physical things. Yeah, I'm excited every time I get a new book that I haven't read yet. Recommend. I also loved hearing that you have a lot of interns, which means you're being a mentor to others.
I've had interns coming straight out of high school. I've had interns in their master's programs, and it is amazing to see where they land and where they end up. And we do a lot of gigs. So folks that are looking to change careers, mid-career. So I'd say a good majority of learning professionals have come and found their way mid-career. They don't come out of college like I did. And so we do a lot of gigs where we can bridge people over into learning and really help them to grow and see if it's something they want. And they usually do.
So I think that's a wonderful service that you do, because it is so hard to get that first step into learning and development. Even if you've gone through the whole master's program and everything, still hard to get that first job. So I think that's wonderful. And of course, they don't want to leave. Who would ever want to leave this field? It's so much fun.
Yeah. That's the good news and the challenging news, right? I have an incredibly tenured team, which I am super excited about, because we have folks that can really run like clockwork. And so finding ways to make sure that we can bring new talent in as well and grow them alongside continues to be something that we think about.
So you have been an amazing guest, Teresa. You've given us so much great information. You're giving a lot of food for thought for our listeners. And I can't wait to hear the finished podcast, because I know it's going to be fantastic. And thank you to our listeners for joining us this week for Learning Leader Spotlight. I hope you tune in next week to hear from our next learning leader. And thank you again, Teresa.
Thanks so much, Leah. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.